I'll stand over here. My shoes don't match because I was tooling around them with them in the grandma way. Often during dinner, grandma used to bring a picture of herself down from her bedroom, and she would tell me how much I looked like her when she was younger. Grandma was not a stunning woman. At this point of time, about 1973 or so, she was somewhat wrinkled and baggy, and I was a teenager who did not want to be told that this was what I was made of. Not that she didn't look rather lovely in the picture of her as a 17-year-old, but I thought that if I looked like she did when she was young, then it would only follow that I looked like her when she was old, and that was a little too scary for me. But I've grown up a lot since then, and I've gotten wiser to what I hope are the truer things in life. I've left aesthetics to things that I make, not to the body I make them with. Not that I am not vain in very similar ways that Grandma was. She was vain about the things that she could readily control, like hairstyle and choice of jewelry and clothes and flower arrangements and furniture and fabrics. And as Casey said, of course, she was truly the original Martha Stewart. She set the mold. When she received a rug from her father, this must have happened, this must have been a family tradition too, for a house present, she realized it wasn't quite the right hue, so she made a strong pot of tea and painted the rug in situ. When the rug was just right, she realized that the color of the couch was a bit off, so she sponged it with coffee. It was perfect. She often altered her vases, and she repaired everything with tremendous vigor, if not finesse. I have many of her repair pieces, sort of as a homage to her knack at keeping the material world together. Grandma made a home around her. Everything was a reflection of what she loved about the world. She had her spring green bedroom, like the newest leaves in the spring, her living rooms in these bizarre colors of bone and lichen and the full moon, and she had a cabinet full of treasures that she herself had collected on digs, and her friends had collected on digs. Everybody went on digs, and they brought things back. That was well before the time you weren't allowed to. And she remembered the origin of everything she had. There was a story behind everything, and in that way, her house was like this garden that she was constantly cultivating, and there was a history attached to everything. And She was a tremendous traveler, and I was one of the people who traveled with her when she was a somewhat older woman. And when I was writing this, I was actually driving through a snowstorm, and the sun had just come out, and it made the landscape simply beautiful. And I thought of this, the time that Grandma and I had traveled with Erica was there too. Erica and I and Grandma were traveling in the English countryside. And there was a very handsome and rather homosexual assistant named John, and Grandma kept saying, and this was 1975, "Isn't this so gay?" Laughing about sort of how strangely the time retranslates our language. Grandma had a studio in her house, and she did all sorts of toxic activities there, like kneading epoxy by hand as if it were clay, and I did it too. And I came over after school every day when I was about 9 and 10, 11 or 12 to work on sculpture to build my dollhouse with Stanley, who was one of her assistants. And the wonderful thing, you could always walk into Grandma's house. It took you in no matter what time of day it was. If Grandma was busy, there was Katie in the kitchen, or Stanley in the studio, or Sylvester with a bag on his head, polishing silver in the pantry, and you could just open that aqua blue front door, which is a wildly retro color these days, Grandma's timeless taste that she's always had. Or the kitchen door, if no one answered, you could go through the garage with that mossy, musty smell, the ghosts of all those sculpture casts that were put up against the walls of last spring's dug-up bulbs, the screen porch, and there you would find Grandma wrestling with some fountain or sticking wax onto a head. She always called her bust that she was making heads. Grandma celebrated any religious holiday that offered up good food possibilities. And in this I follow her keen sense of religion's best moment, which is to unite through celebration with family and friends around a table full of food. We went without a moment's hesitation over 10/16 from Passover lamb to Easter ham. In so many ways, many many parts of Grandma reside in me. I swim the breaststroke across Salmon Lake in Maine and snort at each pull. I fix things, or I put things up in my studio to be fixed. I eat butter at every meal. I like flowery crockery. When I brush my hair, I often think that my hair must have been very much like her hair, too. And I certainly have my thighs and all that will befall them. And I have books piled on my bedroom windowsills, and I keep a present drawer, too, which she always did. So in case it was someone's birthday, she could sneak up and pull a present out of it and give it to them, which was very nice. I work in a studio in my house, and I make things, and I feel very strongly about my friends and my family. And I look forward to being in Maine with my sister and my lady friends in the deep future. Although, in a funny way, we didn't always get along, Grandma and I. She rarely had anything complimentary to say about me or anything I did. I was too large, I was unfit to eat with the queen, my wedding bouquet was too big, and my sculpture, egads, it's beyond the pale. But I know that we must have innately understood that we were of the same stuff. And I am a continuation of her flesh and her mind. And now, as I get older, when I think about being like her, I'm no longer trembling at the thought. Grandma.